Hi, everybody. It's Frank Lamani, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us for yet another monthly installment of the SPLC podcast, where we talk about legal issues and developments of impact to those working in the student media. So I have to confess that this month is a little bit of a First Amendment fanboy geek moment for me. It's a chance to have a conversation with one of the true heroines of the First Amendment, somebody that I've gotten to know for in my 5 years in this job. One of the very first phone calls that I got, and still the most exciting one that I got when I took over as director of the Student Press Law Center, and that was from Mary Beth Tinker. Mary Beth Tinker should not need any introduction to anyone who has passed a middle school civics course, but just in case, Mary Beth Tinker's name should be familiar to everybody as the Tinker in Tinker versus Des Moines Independent Community School District, the landmark U.S. Supreme Court case that firmly established the First Amendment rights of students in America's public schools to express in the non-disruptive expression of their choice, even on school grounds and even during school time. We're delighted to have Mary Beth with us this month to talk about an exciting project that she and our other guest, Mike Heaston, are launching together. Mike, too, is someone who should need no introduction to folks who know the SPLC. For 20 years, Mike worked for us as a staff attorney, helping more than 10,000 students and teachers with individual phone calls on our legal hotline, covering the country, teaching workshops, being the primary author of the Law of the Student Press reference book that is in newsrooms and classrooms across the country. Mike is now living on the West Coast, works for the SPLC on a special assignment basis and a consulting basis, and is still a very valued friend and ally of ours. And Mike Heaston and Mary Beth Tinker, thanks for being with us today. And I guess let's just go ahead and dive right in. And Mary Beth, for those who flunked middle school civics, take us back and just share for a minute the story of the Tinker versus Des Moines case and why this should still resonate with people all these years later.
Okay. Thanks, Frank. It's so good to be with you and Mike today and with all the listeners as we talk about civics and the rights of youth. And there's so many things going on today with young people standing up and speaking up, and I think young people need their rights, need to know their rights and use them more than ever. So when I was a young girl growing up, it was in a time like this, actually, when there were a lot of important issues to be decided in our country and in our world, things having to do with the environment. I mean, the environmental movement was really started at that time with Silent Spring by Rachel Carson, the book that really, you know, changed everyone's thinking about the environment. And then we had, of course, the racial issues, the civil rights movement, also immigration issues, even gay issues. There was a big gay marriage case at our Supreme Court, too, back then. It was decided in 1967, the Loving case. So it was a very similar time when there's so many issues and so many things that young people wanted also to take part in, you know, having a say about these things that were going on in our world. And so I was raised pretty much in the church. My dad was a Methodist preacher in Des Moines, Iowa. And so, of course, we learned these values of brotherhood, and my parents decided, why wait for heaven for that? We should put this into action on earth, and let's, you know, jump in and work on brotherhood and those kinds of issues right here on earth. So they got involved with some of the civil rights issues. When I was 5 years old, for example, there was a swimming pool in town in Des Moines, Iowa. I mean, in Atlantic, Iowa, a small town where we lived, and they wouldn't allow black kids to swim there. And so my dad decided that wasn't very Christianly and it wasn't very democratic, so he and some other kids, young people, went up to the city hall and worked on changing that. And that's kind of the way that I was raised. So by the mid-1960s, you know, when people were speaking up and standing up, 1963, we're just passing the 50th anniversary of the Birmingham Children's March, where thousands of kids in Birmingham, Alabama, spoke up and got out in the streets, and so many of them were arrested, and they even sicked the dogs on them and fire hoses and everything. All these black kids there with Martin Luther King and others, they were standing up for what was right, standing up for democracy. And so I would see these kinds of things on TV, and it made a big impression on me. And then by 1965, when the Vietnam War was building up, there had been about 1,000 soldiers killed in the war by then. And so, you know, us kids decided to do something about it because we had these examples of other kids that speak up and stand up. And so we just decided to wear black armbands to school to support a truce that was being proposed by Senator Robert Kennedy that Christmas, and also to mourn the dead in Vietnam. And there were just a handful of us, the kids in our, by that time my dad was with the Quakers, and so some of the kids in our Quaker meeting and also some of the kids at the other youth group, we were with the Unitarian youth, they got involved, and just a few of us kids, you know, a small group decided that we would do this, and we were just really emotionally moved by what was going on TV. When we watched the war, we would see the soldiers on the ground in the body bags and the flaming, burning huts and all of these things going on. It just looked like the world was on fire when we watched the news, and kids in our neighborhood were being called up to war, so we just wanted to say something about it and do something about it. And so, you know, the principals, they found out about it and decided that was too controversial, and they made a ruling against us wearing the armbands. It was in 1965. I was in eighth grade. I was 13 years old. And so my brother John and Chris Eckhart and Chris Singer, Bruce Clark, Ross Butte, a few of us decided to do it. And even though it was against the rules, we finally, it was a hard decision because it was against the rule, but in the end, we had these examples of other people that stand up for what they believe in, like Martin Luther King even, and those kind of people. And so we decided we had our conscience, and we wanted to use our First Amendment rights too. And so, you know, a few of us were suspended. And my parents, you know, they kind of understood because they had, at first they didn't want us to do it, but then they understood because we said, look, that's how you raised us, you know. He gave us these examples, like going to the swimming pool to speak up. So we were suspended, and then I guess it would have been the end of the whole thing, but there's a group called the American Civil Liberties Union, and they came in and offered a lawyer because they thought kids should have rights too, and they go to the Supreme Court a lot because their whole thing is the Bill of Rights and standing up for it. So that's what happened, and then my life went on, and I was in, you know, junior high and high school, and then by 1969 we finally won the case. We lost at the first at the district court and at the appeals court. And, of course, I thought we'd lose the whole thing because I thought kids wouldn't have a chance, you know, against people like, you know, the teachers and the principals and things. But some of the school board was in favor of us, and there's mixed feelings about it. But in 1969, the court ruled by 7-2 that neither students or teachers lose their rights to express themselves in school. So it was a great victory, not only for us, but for young people all over the country.
It's a fantastic story and a fantastic precedent that still stands to this day, and something that every school kid should learn about, and not just learn about, should be able to live in their own life. Mike, let's turn to you and tell us about this concept that we're here to talk about today, the Tinker Tour. Tell us about this idea. How did it come about, and what are you and Mary Beth aspiring to do?
Well, I joke with Mary Beth that, you know, I think I might have told her story more than she has. That's probably not true, but, you know, for 20 years, like you mentioned, I was an attorney with the Student Press Law Center, and I continue to do some of that work. And, you know, the story of First Amendment rights for students starts with Mary Beth's case. I mean, that's how it is. And so one of the things that I always did that I learned how powerful it was very early on was, you know, I'd go into a classroom and they'd be waiting to hear from an attorney and, you know, expecting all these, you know, court cases and citations and things like that. But I'd lead with Mary Beth's story, and the mood in the room quickly changed. I mean, there is a real power to her story. And so Mary Beth and I actually met. It was about 15 years into doing my job at the SPLC before I got to meet her in person. And like you, Frank, I mean, you know, there's a star-struck sort of quality about, you know, meeting Mary Beth. And it's, you know, she'll be the first to say that it's not about her. It really is about
Yeah, because that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. But
Yeah. But you know, it's true. I mean, you know, you stand for something very, very important, very, very powerful. And so she, when I was retiring from full-time work with the SPLC, the Society for Professional Journalists was kind enough to give me an award. And Mary Beth somehow saw that I was getting the award, and she sent me a nice congratulatory email. And, you know, it was just, you know, all part of feeling good and everything. I remember I was actually out in my hot tub, just kind of relaxing. And just kind of from nowhere, you know, this idea for the Tinker Tour came about. I mean, I'd always dreamed about, you know, when I worked for the SPLC, about, you know, kind of taking our show on the road and, you know, meeting students in their schools and kind of spreading our message that way instead of waiting for them to come to us and go to conventions and things like that. But when Mary Beth sent me the email, again, it just kind of all came together. I said, my goodness, you know, it really is almost like being able to take someone like Rosa Parks on tour. She has an effect on students that is, you know, undeniable. And so what we're trying to do with the Tinker Tour is it's really very simple. I mean, we are trying to, you know, raise money to get a bus or a reliable RV is what I'm telling people, and go on tour and go from school to school and college to college and throw some conventions in along the way, and just simply talk to students about the importance of free speech and the importance of civics education generally. I mean, Mary Beth and I are kind of coming from different, and talking about doing the tour here, one of the things that we talked about was, you know, our experience with Vietnam War, I guess. You know, about a year after Mary mm-hmm. Beth wore her black armband to school and was suspended, my uncle, actually, he was a fighter pilot. He went to Vietnam and was shot down and killed, and left behind, you know, my five cousins. And then 2 years later, my dad, you know, was also a fighter pilot. I remember very clearly, you know, watching him, you know, take off to Vietnam. And I mean, those were it was a very different sort of experience. And so, you know, when Mary Beth talks about, you know, wanting kids to be able to stand up and express themselves on issues like that, you know, it really hits home in a very personal way. So we really hope by, you know, taking our message on the road that we're able to reach students that we might not otherwise have the opportunity to talk to.
This is such a fun idea. I want to give everybody the website to look at. It's called tinkertourusa.org, tinkertourusa.org, and we'll give that again at the close of the discussion. But I want to ask Mary Beth Tinker, you know, you have obviously a great sense of the climate of the First Amendment schools. You travel around to lots of them. You're interacting with students all the time. Why do you think in the year 2013, why do you think this message is important, is timely, is resonant? What is the importance of telling the story to young people about the role of the First Amendment in their lives?
Frank, there are so many decisions that are being made about students right now that are going to affect them for years, whether it has to do with the education system and what is it going to be like? Is it proportion of their results will be based on standardized testing. What public schools will be closed? I was just at a big event at the Department of Education where students had come from 30 cities, and they wanted to speak to Arne Duncan about the issue of public school closings in their communities from Detroit, Chicago, all over the place. There are issues having to do with, as I said, the environment. There's a girl named Sarah Kavanaugh. She just found out, she was living in Alabama, and she found out there was brominated vegetable oil in Gatorade. And so she started an online petition and she got over 200,000 signatures on this, and Gatorade has agreed to take out this flame retardant called brominated vegetable oil, which was in Gatorade. There are so many things going on in so many areas, whether it's kids getting suspended and locked up. There's the school-to-prison pipeline, which a lot of people have been talking about and concerned about. And just so many things that kids need to have some say about the issues and the decisions that are going to affect their lives. And they want to everywhere I go, because I travel a lot now. And I was just at four journalism conferences, Seattle, St. Louis, Ohio, D.C. They, you know, students are writing about these things in their papers and talking about them at their city councils and going to hearings in D.C. Some kids just were at a hearing talking about school closing issues. There's just so many things that students are speaking up and standing up about, and I think it's great, and I want to encourage them to know their rights and speak up about the issues that are going to affect them and that already are.
Well, Mike, let me throw that question to you and ask it in a slightly different way. You know, again, you spend and have spent for many years a lot of time around young people in schools, talking to teachers, talking to students. I mean, what is your sense of kind of the health of the First Amendment in schools around the country and the urgency of getting this message out into the school communities?
Well, there's a wonderful pardon. Do you want to say something?
Yeah, go ahead. Mike, you start. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, it really, when you look back at Mary Beth's case in 1969, it really was kind of the high mark of First Amendment protection for students in this country. And, you know, ever since, you know, for reasons that, you know, we all probably have different opinions about, you know, the courts and schools and just, you know, kind of society in general has tried to scale back those rights. And so, you know, like Mary Beth said, there are a lot of students that are out there doing some very important work, some very exciting sort of work. But certainly, you know, in my time at the SPLC, it's not easy to do sometimes in some places. Students are really having to fight to have their voices heard. You know, there's a reason that you know that big change happens with students, and I think you know that sometimes frightens the powers that be. I mean, you know, that students don't have mortgages to pay and families to support, and so when they actually are given the ability to have their voice heard, you know, big things can happen, and I think that you know, I think that's been kind of scary. And so, yeah, we've seen we've seen the First Amendment rights for students significantly whittled away, and we're just trying to again remind students that, you know, it's not over yet. You know, there are some really exciting things that are happening right now, and simply because a principal or, you know, some other authority figure says you can't, that doesn't have to be the end of it.
Go ahead, Mary Beth. You were going to add something to that.
We are so lucky for our tour, the Tinker Tour, to have been endorsed by a number of leading civics education organizations, people like the Campaign for the Civic Mission of Schools, National History Day, the National Council of Social Studies Teachers, the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, which has invited us to kick off from their center. We're so excited about that. And why do these why are these groups endorsing? Because there is a lack of civics education in our country today, and in our democracy really depends on having an educated citizenry and one that uses the Constitution, uses the foundation of our democracy in practice. I mean, there have been some studies. There's a group called iCivics that Sandra Day O'Connor has been very involved with, and she's doing a great job of spreading civics education around. But, you know, these studies show that only one-third of Americans can name all three branches of government, for example, and one-third of Americans can't name any. And these aren't students. These are adults, or that, you know, only half of Americans know that a decision by the Supreme Court that is 5-4 has the same weight as a decision that's 9-0. Just things like that. How the Supreme Court works. What are the three branches of government? Basic civics education is not in a good place in our country right now, and I think that's why we're getting the endorsement of so many organizations, the NAACP, the ACLU, the Close Up Foundation, the museum. We made a film there about our tour, and just so many people are really behind this because they see that there's a need more than ever in our country for basic civics education and to encourage, you know, young people, and they take education home to their families too. So this, we know that this will be a good thing not only for youth but for their families and the adults in their lives as well.
One of the things I love about your campaign on TinkerTourUSA.org is you're trying to engage young people on platforms like Instagram to send in a copy of their favorite celebrity if they can ambush a celebrity and get them to flash a peace sign, which is sort of what you've decided, which is a great symbol, yeah. Kind of the universal symbol of the Tinker Tour. That will be really cool, and I will really look forward to seeing some of those results as kids get out there with their cameras and start shooting. That'll be really cool. And I also note that you've been invited, in addition to National Constitution Center, you'll be at the Supreme Court in the fall, during the Supreme Court's fall term, to talk about the Tinker case, you and your brother, right?
Yes, we're really excited about just going around the country to all different kind of places at the Supreme Court. There's going to be a talk about the case and the people involved in the case. And, you know, we're just excited about all of the conferences that are coming up that we'll be able to stop at and to talk to students, teachers, and others about the First Amendment, the Constitution, journalism, education, and their rights and their responsibilities in our democracy. It's really exciting.
You know, one of the things that I've seen, I'll just real quick here, is you know, yeah. Mary Beth and I have done, we did kind of a quick mini version of the Tinker Tour, just kind of to check and see how it would fly when Mary Beth is out visiting me here. And it is just... You know, like I said, Frank, you and I have been out talking to students for years and years. We have never got a tenth of the response, the enthusiasm that that Mary Beth generates. And it's just, you know, it's so rewarding, I guess, and just so exciting to see students jazzed up about, you know, these important topics. And so, you know, if we can make sure that we can kind of allow as many students and teachers and journalists, I mean, we see this from journalists too. I mean, they're big fans. And so if we can kind of stir up that enthusiasm on kind of more of a national level, it's going to be great fun.
And the fun is really mine. I just love being with all the kids and hearing the things they have to say. A seventh grader in Ohio just told me recently, you know, she thinks that, she says, we're fresher. And I just love it, you know, because they are fresher and they really want to take action. They're naturally geared to take action and to stand up and to get involved. Most of the time I work as a pediatric nurse, so I have a lot of fun with kids. I like kids a lot, and I know that this tour is going to be really great and have a lot of great energy.
Well, Mike, just by way of wrap-up, I guess, tell folks how they can get involved in various ways and be supporters of this initiative and help make the Tinker Tour happen this year.
Yeah, well, first thing is we need a bus or a reliable
right.
RV. And so, you know, we have launched a crowdsource campaign on StartSomeGood.com. You can just search for Tinker Tour there, and we're looking to raise money for a bus and for the gas to put in the bus and for, you know, all the various logistical things that go into making this tour happen. So that would be the first thing. The campaign ends at the end of this month, so May 31st. We're trying to raise at least $50,000 there. That will get us 2 months on the road, maybe a little bit more. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, we're looking to be on the road for about 5 to 6 months because we already have about 100 invitations. And so, you know, fitting everybody in is going to be tough. Ideally, we'd like to raise about $100,000 to do that. But a lot more information is available, on our Start Some Good campaign site page, or you can also go to our website, as you mentioned, just TinkerTourUSA.org.
That's great. Well, definitely want to invite people to check out the StartSomeGood.com site, to check out the TinkerTourUSA.org site, and let me throw in one more just for good measure. Not necessarily a coincidence that this tour falls on top of the 25th anniversary of the Hazelwood School District versus Kuhlmeier decision. If the Tinker case was the high water mark for student free expression, then Hazelwood was potentially the low water mark in 1988. This year has been a year of reflection and reassessment around the country as people are taking stock of the detrimental impact that Hazelwood has had on the climate of schools and in the ability, especially of student journalists, to freely express themselves. And it would be great if folks would check out the curehazelwood.org site to get more information about the effects of Hazelwood, the symptoms of Hazelwood, how you can get checked out, and how you can get cured. So I just want to say thanks again to two of my First Amendment heroes, Mike Heaston and Mary Beth Tinker, for being with us on the podcast today. We hope you'll check out their website, and we hope you'll check out all the resources that are available to you on the SPLC site, www.splc.org. If you're a student journalist or a journalism educator and you've got any questions about the law of the First Amendment or about your legal rights to gather and share news, we hope you'll send us an email, splc@splc.org. Call our hotline at 703-807-1904 or send us a tweet. We're on Twitter @SPLC. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next month.